It is the Savage Nation. We're playing at the Hop Whatever. Some new stories for you to digest. Yesterday, the day before, we appointed that Obama appointed a cop hater to be his green czar with a gargantuan budget. No one knows what a green czar will do, but I do. What you learned today is that a lawyer for the rat boy American Taliban who fought along the side of the enemy in Afghanistan, that lawyer, that defense lawyer, that radical left winger is now at the U.S. Justice Department. So expect to see innocent people in America arrested along the lines of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Honest, good-looking, good-working, honest, good-looking, good-working Americans who believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness will be harassed by this Justice Department and arrested for their beliefs in borders, language, and culture as sure as I am sitting here. There are other stories. You can go to michaelsavage.com, and you can see what they are. And you can see that this nice, quiet-speaking man with a good voice is anything but a moderate. He is a radical leftist of the most extreme variety, conducting a softcore communist revolution in the United States of America, according to me, Michael Savage, one man's opinion. If you want to discuss these topics, you can do so by calling 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin with Larry in Hampton, Virginia. Larry, welcome to the program.
Michael, you need to show the office of the presidency some respect. You're showing no respect.
Where is it written that an American has to worship the president?
You cause more divisiveness than is necessary.
Larry, where in the U.S. Constitution does it say a person in the media or an average person has to respect the president?
It's the office of the president, of all the presidents.
Well, where were you when you were shooting your loud mouth off for all the years Bush was president? Did you respect him?
Yes, I did. The office.
Well, that's your obligation to do what you believe to be true. I don't believe this man deserves respect. I believe he's a dangerous radical who must be pointed out every day what this man is doing.
You're causing more harm, Michael.
What do you say, causing who?
You're causing more harm.
Well, that's terrible, Larry. Why don't you report me to one of the goons in the Justice Department?
Savage.
Larry, why don't you call up the federal government and have me reported for expressing my beliefs, Larry? Then you'll be living in the Nazi state that you would like, wouldn't you, Larry? Where the goon squads under Obama can arrest somebody for not loving him and worshiping him? I'm not going to worship this guy who wants to be king. I think this guy's an imposter and a fraud. I think he's a fraud and an imposter. And I think he was put in by foreign money. How do you like that? And if you think I'm the only one, Larry, you're living in a dream world. And you're eating too much crab cake down there in Hampton, Virginia. Contaminated crab cake. Filled with toxic mercury that has affected your brain. I'll be right back.
Savage. I left my heart in San Francisco.
This is Michael Savage. I feel like Voltaire on visiting the Mediterranean, who wishes he was back in Paris. I mean, I miss San Francisco. You can't understand how wonderful it is to live in a place where everyone is so phenomenally rich with the potential for ridicule. It's what drove Voltaire into his late years. People would say to Voltaire, why do you live in Paris if you ridicule them so? And he said, that's the answer to your question. I mean, where else could I live? He said, the foibles of the Parisian produces great, great fodder for me. Unfortunately, where I'm living right now, things are so nice, there's nothing to focus on locally. It's too good. The air is clean. There's no noise. There's no barbecue smoke, no wood fireplaces. You know, San Francisco, where I live, is the most polluted place I've ever lived in my life, filled with green morons. Green morons. Green morons. They burn wood fires at night, giving themselves and their children cancer, and they think that they're into protecting global warming. But it's wonderful to live around that. So another radical appointed by Obama, this one to the Justice Department in the Civil Rights Division named Tony West, and he was the defense lawyer for the American Taliban or rat boy John Walker Lind. So we're going through a soft communist revolution in America, step by step, appointment by appointment, only you don't know it. And it really doesn't matter to the average person. Most administrations rise or fall on bread and butter issues based on really whether the economy is good or bad. There's no question Bush busted the bank. I mean, you're not going to have an argument with me on that. I'm a realist. I know what went on. I know that Bush broke the economy over his knee to make sure that the defense contractors who are corrupt, not all of them, the ones who he hired to do the jobs, robbed us blind like lice feeding on a body. There's no question Bush fed the Republican ticks so much blood that they finally burst from the blood they were sucking out of the American people. There's no question that they threw this broken economy at Obama. I agree with all of that. However, the steps that Obama has taken so far are all wrong. Every one of them has been wrong, which is why he's reversed himself virtually every day. Moreover, his appointments are shocking if you actually analyze them, which I have done all week long. And if you want to talk about these topics, the phone number is one. I predict Timothy Geithner will be out within a very short period of time. The Boy Scout will be looking for a job. Maybe he can bag groceries in Waldbaum's, you know, where he started. Or maybe he can move to Thailand and import Thai sticks. But the fact is, Timothy Geithner is the most unqualified man in the history of the American government. Not that he's a radical. See, now here's an example of a guy who's not a left-wing radical, like the Green Czar or the man who was appointed to the Justice Department. Timothy Geithner is just an unqualified, stupid boy who was put in there because they thought he'd be a good servant of the power, a power class, the ruling class. I mean, he did work for them at the bank, the New York Federal Reserve Bank, while the economy was melting down. What did he do? Nothing. You know what I'm saying? So they'll put in the next stooge there to make certain that the money is still made by the money interests. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Obama's poll numbers are falling. We got this. We got that. Let's go to New York City, WOR. Carla, you're on the program. What's on your mind? Go ahead.
Three very short points, Michael. First of all, this afternoon, as I'm sure you're aware, the Reuters, it was on Reuters and ABC's News, announced the Obama administration has officially dropped enemy combatant as a term to define terrorists.
Well, that's right. What they are freedom fighters. Islamic radicals are no longer enemy combatants, even if they put a roadside bomb under a vehicle or if they flew a plane into the World Trade Center or planned it, rather. They are considered freedom fighters to Obama.
But it's beyond that. All al-Qaeda and Taliban detainees currently at Guantanamo will be reevaluated. The only al-Qaeda and Taliban detainees who are allowed to be detained are those for whom the United States government can prove were involved in what's called substantial combat, meaning if the U.S.
I think that's really great. That's social justice. You know why, Carla? Because unless you find them cutting a little child's throat open, they can't be considered a child.
Two other points.
Even the guys who they caught and put on trial in Puerto Rico recently said, with terrorists to the bone, are they going to call them freedom fighters as well?
I know. There's two more points.
Carla, there's a positive note to this as well. If we don't stigmatize Islamic radicals as terrorists, they may actually like us. You understand that, Carla? They may even join the U.S. military. They may sign up and fight alongside our troops, fragging them in the back. And then, of course, they wouldn't be tried and called enemy combatants then as well, because a person wouldn't have it on videotape at that point, Carla.
Yeah, I know. Can I mention the two other points?
Oh, there's two other points? Sure, go ahead, make my day.
Okay, I have always agreed from day one, been called every name in the book, that yes, this is a communist takeover. I agree with you also that he is being funded, has been funded, and is a plan from a foreign government. However, I would like you to remember, do you remember the Million Man March? Do you remember when Farrakhan got up there on the stage? It was during the Clinton administration. There was a tremendous amount of anger among the Nation of Islam because the Clinton administration refused to send somebody from the administration to stand up there on the podium. And there was a lot of anger after that happened. My theory is, on top of everything else we've said, that Obama is the executor, the implementor for the vision of Farrakhan, for the vision of Reverend Wright.
Well, of course he is. There's virtually no difference between Reverend Wright's rhetoric and Obama's actions, almost none whatsoever.
the guy who implemented...
Oh, almost none. Everything Wright taught him, everything that he put into this guy's head for 20 years is being acted out by Obama as though he's a puppet. I agree 100%. Reverend Wright really didn't say anything different than what Obama's doing. He talked about social injustice. He talked about this. He talked about that. And everything Obama's doing is acting out Reverend Wright's rhetoric. Only the difference is this is a smooth-talking guy. Reverend Wright was a little emotional.
Savage.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above.
Shaboom-io.
If you would tell me I'm the only one that
who is this group, guys? I know Shaboom.
Sweetheart.
The Crew Cuts. Another time in America. What a wonderful country it was when I was a boy. Great country. Look what it's become, a cesspool. A cesspool. The police have to hide from the criminal vermin that they've let in through the back door. The criminal vermin have AK-47s, the cops have Glocks and 9mm guns. That's the world we're living in. And if you think it's bad, you're right. Only it's nothing compared to what we are going to become. We become a second-class nation. We're about to become a third-world nation. A few more years. You wait and see. Now, we open the show today describing for you that a lawyer, a radical left-wing lawyer, Tony West, who represented Rat Boy, the American Taliban, John Walker Lynn, who is now rotting in prison where he belongs, in my opinion. His lawyer, Tony West, is now in the U.S. Justice Department. Step by step, day by day, the vision of every left-wing radical in America is being realized under Barack Hussein Obama. Now, a while ago, I did a piece on Rat Boy that was semi-comedic in the political arena, which we're going to play for you so you know who we're talking about. Fire.
This is Graham Hancock on special assignment with Michael Savage reporting from the field. Today, we're examining the question of what happened. What created Johnny Jihad? What were the forces that molded this unfortunate man's life? Here, we attempt to demonstrate what happened. The reasons.
We now take you to the imaginary home of the boy Taliban in A Day in the Life of the Boy Taliban, Johnny Jihad, Fairfax, California, a town without pity. And we imagine a scene such as this may have occurred. Little boy Taliban has just soiled his diaper. He has then picked up the diaper and said,
doo-doo.
And smeared it on the wall.
Oh, Johnny, what did you do? Johnny, that is... Oh. Honey.
How dare you interfere with our son's creative abilities, you chauvinist pig.
Oh, God.
Don't you realize that's as good as any Renoir? Our son is destined to be a great artist. But if you don't stop interfering, he'll end up in the gutter. Besides, it's a rental. Let those bourgeois pigs take care of the mess.
Next scene I would imagine would be Johnny Boy in school being asked to do the Pledge of Allegiance. Although in Fairfax, California, the pledge has been banned since the Civil War, we would imagine at some point in his early days of schooling, he might have been asked to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I refuse to do the Pledge of Allegiance. My mother says I don't have to. You know, I'm not going to waste my time pledging my allegiance to a bunch of dead old white men. Besides, this is a pig nation. Who wants to be a part of it anyway?
Oh, in the next scene, the teacher turns him on to smoking pot.
Johnny.
Oh, Teach, what's happening, dude?
Are you still smoking those Lucky Strikes?
Yeah, it's all I can afford, man.
Come on over here. Let me expand your horizons.
Whoa.
Little Kona Gold for you.
Kona Gold, huh? I'll take some of that.
The next scene is, of course, a hardened convict from San Quentin who's out on work release, and his work is teaching children multiculturalism.
When you're incarcerated, you begin to understand that there is a general oppression that exists in our country.
Right on,
and what we need is liberation from that oppression. And when you find a higher state of consciousness connected to the greater source of understanding, that is a point of time at which your mind is liberated and the shackles of intellectual control are thrown off. And you're able to function on a higher level, being free from the laws and the conscience.
Next scene is he's in Tamiskil High School, the school for special troublemakers. He's trying to grow corn. He puts the corn in the ground and steps on it with his foot.
Dude, I don't know why I should have to water this corn. I mean, it's natural, you know? I put it in the ground, I cover it with the soil, let nature do the rest. It's really taking me down that I have to do so much work in order to create my food, man. I don't know. My mom never raised me to do this kind of thing. Help me. I'm completely lost.
How about Johnny's first date?
Johnny, what's the matter with you? Why won't you kiss me? Don't you like me?
Oh, you have germs. You're a girl, and...
What, you don't like girls? What's your problem?
I hate my mother. So, can't you have more sensitivity for me? I'm going through something really difficult.
How about we take you to Johnny Jihad's cousin in Berkeley, California?
There's no actual released evidence that links Osama bin Laden to this.
Seems to be genetic.
Our parents taught us not to hit when we were young, not to hit back, and that's exactly what we're doing.
After being indoctrinated by the liberal left, Johnny had one final discussion with his father that sent him running off to the side of the Taliban.
Regarding the USS Cole, Johnny, I just think it was downright wrong.
Ah, you've got to be kidding, Dodd. That was a completely justifiable act of self-defense on behalf of the Yemen people. Ah, I can't take this anymore, dude. I'm going off to war. I'm going to fight imperialism and greed and corporate control. I can't take it anymore.
It is uncertain what motivated Johnny Jihad to go off to war to take the side of the enemy. But here, Michael, is a final addendum to this story. Last week, just hours before Taliban and Al-Qaeda prisoners began their uprising in the northern Afghan fortress of Kalajangi, CIA agents interviewed Johnny Jihad. The interrogation, which took place shortly before one of the agents, Michael Spann, was killed, was videotaped by an Afghan cameraman. There you have it, up to this point. Back to you, Michael Savage.
All right, a little comedy in the political arena. A lawyer for American Taliban to serve at Justice Department that came to us today from newsbusters.org. Amazing. There are other stories. 1-800-449-8255 is the combination into the program to reach more people than you'll meet for the rest of your life, which is a pretty powerful statement when you think about it. When you consider the power and reach of the Savage Nation, when you speak on this show, when you have the honor of getting on this program, when you have the honor of speaking to this audience, you're speaking to more people than you've ever met and more people than you'll ever meet. So think about that. Let's go to Albany, New York. Mike, welcome to the program. You're on the air.
Yeah, I am just absolutely in disbelief that this, with everything that's going on, that Obama even still has an approval rating. West being appointed, Schrillery announcing $900 million for Palestine relief. And you know most of that through UNRWA is going to end up in the hands of Hamas. He's not even trying to hide it. I don't understand.
Well, Hamas are freedom fighters to the Obama administration. You understand where his sympathies lie. Just listen to Reverend Wright's early sermons. Look at the ties between Obama and Palestinian groups years ago. This was hushed up by the vermin in the media, but there's no question this is going to happen. And then what's going to happen if that happens? Well, you think something's going to happen if they find out the money's been going to Hamas? What's the big deal about that when you consider that Clinton armed the Palestinians? It was Clinton who sent them 800,000 machine guns, remember?
I do. And at this point right now, I am as much in mourning for my country as I am enraged by what's going on. And
Yes, Obama is a charlatan and a fraud. He's conducting a soft Marxist revolution. Eventually, the people will find out. It may be too late at that point. There's nothing I can do other than expose my beliefs and try to back my beliefs up with the facts on the ground.
To your point about talking to more people than I'll ever meet, I am begging the country that is listening right now to wake up. You are asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, they don't even know what the wheel is. Thank you for the call. Missouri, Joe, you're up. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Taking the call. I just wanted to tell you that I know that you love your country, but it seems to me like you're stuck in the 1950s and we're moving on here.
Moving on to what?
We're moving on to try to clean up the mess that Bush made.
You mean the mess that Nixon made? You're really not up to date. Isn't it Nixon who did it to us?
Date. I'm very up to date.
Yeah, no, it was Nixon who did it, not Bush. Nixon started the downfall. Had we only elected an outright communist in the 60s, we would have a much better country, according to you, right, Joe? You'd be a rich man.
You don't let any liberals have a chance.
Joe, let me ask you something. Do you blame your failure on people around you who are more successful?
You will not give liberals a chance to give their views.
No, but Joe, I'm asking you, do you think that you are poor and nobody because of people's success?
I'm not poor and I'm not nobody.
Yes, you are. We know that. You're a nobody, and you think that if an outright Marxist revolution occurred, you'd be getting something. But what you don't know is the same people will wind up on top anyway.
Well, that's I can't argue against that.
Oh, you actually heard me.
I haven't heard you. It's a belief that I happen to share with you that I've had.
Oh, well, that's nice. I'm glad that you heard me. I'm using modernistic terminology. So what's your main point, Joe? I really don't get it.
Well, my main point is that you keep calling Obama a Marxist. You keep calling you say that liberals are a disease. The disease left the White House 2 months ago, and I know you
I didn't say it's a disease. I said liberalism is a mental disorder. I didn't say it's a disease. I have nothing against mentally ill people. I think they need treatment. Now, let me ask you something. Naming radicals who are in Guantanamo, changing their designation from enemy combatants to, what, just prisoners, that's your idea of justice?
I don't think the issue is money right now, Michael.
You didn't hear what I just said. I didn't raise the issue of money. What are you reading from talking points for all radio shows that don't match this show? I just asked you a question.
Independent thinker, Michael.
No, you're not an independent thinker. You have no thought process whatsoever by what you're saying. Today, Obama appointed the lawyer for the American Taliban to the Justice Department. Doesn't that worry you?
No, it doesn't worry me because everybody has a fair day in court. And if you don't believe that, then you don't believe in...
Everybody has a fair day in court, but he's had his day in court. He was found guilty.
I've had a day in court.
You're not hearing, Joe. You're reading talking points, and you're calling multiple shows each day. No doubt you're a member of Acorn. Is that their new tactics, Joe, is they send you money to call radio shows?
There's no point in preaching to the choir, but the problem is...
You're not... Okay, get him off the show. The guy isn't even listening to a word anyone's saying to him. He's reading a script. He's too stupid to even discuss things. Wisconsin Jack, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. Just appreciate your service to your country. I appreciate you guys on talk radio keeping us informed all the time, all of us trying to work for a living. I agree with you 100%. Obama's doing 100. All these things he's doing are exactly opposite of what he should be doing. But I just wanted to ask everybody within range of your voice to, if they agree to protest this administration by mailing a tea bag into the White House April 1st.
No, I'm not into adolescent protests. I understand what that means, but they're going to look at it as a joke. It'll only make them feel more powerful. So I don't agree with you on that at all. 1-800-449-8255. By the way, folks, this week we talked about the following topics: stem cell research, the Hollywood idiots who went to Iran, including Annette Bening, who kissed the hem of the Hitler of our time. We talked about Pelosi's trying to use and using the U.S. Air Force as a private airline, demanding G-5s and throwing a hissy fit when she didn't get them. We talked about Bernie Madoff and his lawyer today announced that they're trying to get him out of jail. And then we talked about Obama's appointees, including Van Jones, who has a history as a street agitator and a police hater. If you want to talk about those topics and let the idiots who are listening to the show understand what's going on, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We shall return. Savage. House Speaker Nancy Big Chin Pelosi has repeatedly requested military aircraft to shuttle her and her colleagues and family around the country, according to a new report from Judicial Watch. Pelosi abused the system in place to accommodate congressional leaders and treated the Air Force as a personnel airline. In other words, she wants the military aircraft to be her commuter jets. Judicial Watch said that Pelosi was notorious for making special demands for high-end aircraft, lodging last-minute cancellations, and racking up additional expenses for the military. These emails showed repeated attempts by Pelosi aides to request military aircraft, sometimes aggressively, and by Department of Defense officials to accommodate them. In one email, aide Kay King complained to the military that they had not made available any aircraft the House Speaker wanted for Memorial Day recess. It is my understanding that there are no G5s available for the House during the Memorial Day recess. This is totally inaccessible. The Speaker will want to know where the planes are, King wrote. In another email, when told a certain type of aircraft would not be available, King, the aide to Pelosi, wrote, "This is not good news, and we will have some very disappointed folks, as well as a very upset Speaker." Pelosi spokesman Nadeem El-Shami, that's interesting. Pelosi spokesman Nadeem El-Shami, interesting, Nadeem El-Shami, said the report seemed to be based on only a few emails and said that the military aircraft are a function of the Speaker's office. El-Shami said at least one of the requests in the above emails referenced requests made for other members. Pelosi's office had no comment other than to say that these were only a few emails, and they defended requests for military aircraft for her colleagues as a function of the Speaker's office. Pelosi's office noted that the Department of Defense ultimately makes all decisions on use of military aircraft for travel. Now we know why Obama wants to end the military situation in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's to free up military aircraft for Nancy Big Chin Pelosi. In other words, if you're going to fly Nancy Pelosi and her family and her children around, her documentary film daughter, to do anti-American documentaries, you need as many G5s. I want a G5. I want a G5. Not a G4, not a G3, not a G2. G-oh my, I want a G5, said Nancy. Give me a G5. Give me five. So in other words, the statement, give me five, has a new meaning to Nancy Pelosi and her fascistic minions. When they say give me five to the Defense Department, they mean give me several G5s. That's what that means.
Savage.
Bernie's lawyer, that's Madoff, America's most, what shall I call him? Let's see, most hated man. Would you call Bernie Madoff America's most hated man? Let's for now all agree that we can agree that Bernie Madoff is America's most hated man. His lawyer, Ira Sorkin, his lawyer is trying to spring him out of jail today. And the documents were released, and it says that Bernie Madoff and his wife, Ruthie Girl, are worth over $800 million to this day. In other words, they still have a lot of money. Where's the money? Bernie and his wife, Ruthie, two little kids from Far Rockaway, they did very well, believe me. Oh, you should only know what they... how they lived. Smart. Him and Ruthie own four homes worth $22 million. They had $17 million in cash and a $7 million yacht. The list also shows that Ruthie Madoff owns $2.6 million worth of jewelry and that the couple has $9.9 million in artwork. But the single biggest asset is Bernie's brokerage business, which was listed at $700 million. The appeal will be heard next Thursday. Bernie is now known as inmate number 617-27054. Bet the number. And he spent his first night at the Metropolitan Correctional Center after pleading guilty to the massive scheme. If his appeal is not successful, Bernie will remain in jail until June 16, when he will be sentenced to a federal prison facility. He could get the maximum sentence of 150 years behind bars. And, of course, as we discussed this week, I believe that if Bernie Madoff were released tomorrow, he could run for the presidency and win. He certainly would get an appointment in the Obama administration. I think he could do a better job running the Treasury than Geithner. After all, they're all con men when you think about it. The U.S. Treasury is nothing but a gigantic Ponzi scheme. But even better, they get to print money. Think about that. Think about what Madoff could have done if he could have printed the Madoff instead of the dollar, with a picture of himself on the $10 bill, his wife on the $20 bill, his son on the $50 bill, his grandson's on the $100 bill. Just think about it. In other words, the currency could have been renamed for him if he was Treasury Secretary, the Madoff. How much is a cup of coffee? A Madoff 50. Too much money. It's only worth a Madoff 25. How much of that pair of pants? 19 Madoffs. You know what I'm saying? Think about it. Why do we need old white men with a long hair like that when we have Madoff on there? We can put him on the bill, him and Ruthie. Two little kids from Queens. Did they do well? Unbelievable.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the sinking ship called the Obama Nation. This is the Savage Nation. To me, it will always be the Savage Nation. But to the rest of you morons who elected this charlatan and this faker, we're talking about Madoff's appeal to get him out of the big house. We're talking about Obama's appointment to the Justice Department, a defense attorney for American Taliban, John Walker Lynn. We are talking about this, we're talking about that, we got the week in review, soon the show will be over, I'll go have a beer, life will go on, and we'll watch it sink, that's all, little by little. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. You know the website, I'm not even going to give you the website, that's all. Let's see what's all over the web now. Oh good, the market went up. Is today Friday the 13th? Oh my God. Why didn't they put Madoff in jail today? That would have been good. That would have freaked out all of the conspiracy theorists. Friday the 13th. No wonder I don't feel good. Let's see. I bought new pants and they're scratchy. No, that couldn't be it. I ate in a cheap Japanese Thai sushi place. We'll see in 12 hours what that brings. And you can call me at 1-800-449. You know, we can go light today. We can have an easy day today if you want. Or you want to get crazy, we can get crazy and talk about what's really going on. China is worried about the safety of American treasuries. No kidding. I would say China should be as worried about American T-bills as you should be about Chinese food left out in the sun for about 5 hours. They want guarantees. Now the White House, which was running the economy down for the first few weeks and destroying the financial markets, now Obama's saying things have never been better. They taught him a new tune. He thought it was going to work for him. He almost destroyed the stock market. His poll numbers fell in the toilet. Now suddenly he's the big booster. Things are good. Things are better. There's a chicken in every pot. Actually, under Obama, the new phrase won't be there'll be a chicken in every pot. There'll be a new phrase under Obama, which is that there'll be pot in every chicken once he legalizes. What will he legalize next? I don't know anything. This is the Savage Nation. Let's take the callers. New York City, WOR. Richard, you're on the program. Go ahead, please.
Oh, Michael?
Yes.
You hear me?
Yes, I can, but don't ask me that. What's on your mind?
No, I agree with everything that you say. I'm a conservative and I'm a patriot. And the thing that's on my mind is if we're in a dictatorship and I'm a patriot and there's all these other patriots, how do we get the liberals out of the government?
Oh, how do you get them out? They just got in. How are you going to get them out? It's like asking how you get bed bugs out of a bed. You have to change the bed. That means changing the administration. That means wait a couple of years. The question is, will we still have the freedom to rid ourselves of these bed bugs?
Way to get them out now?
No, there's no way to get them out now. Why impeach him? He didn't do anything that's impeachable. He's very smart. Remember when they tried to impeach Bill Clinton on a stupid thing? I mean, I never went along with that impeachment proceeding for Clinton based on the Monica Lewinsky lie. That wasn't an impeachable offense to me. It was ludicrous. It was a waste of time and money. I would have impeached him for for many, many other things. Chinagate, you know, we're going to go back and live in the past. I can't even remember them all. That was a total waste of time. I'm not into one party attacking the other and pretending they really care. They're all, it's all the same thing. West Palm Beach, Florida. Kieran, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I'm with you, Mike. They're all a bunch of crooks. Republican, Democrat.
That's right. Mike called them Republicrats in 1994. Or then I named them Demikins in 1994. What's the difference? They're both in the same bump. They're both in it on the game, the game.
And, it's just like, I just can't believe this country is so socially robotic. Can't see through this guy. He's more, I want a president that's more concerned about Muslim interests than American interests. I mean, come on.
Well, he wants to make sure that there's justice. That's why he told us we can no longer call them enemy combatants. Well, even though those from Gitmo are not enemy combatants, what they are freedom fighters.
His name's Barack Hussein Obama, and no one thinks he has any connection to Muslim. I mean, come on.
No, the mainstream media says he's always been a Christian, even though it's proven that he was a Muslim as a youth. But I keep saying, so what? I mean, just because you're Muslim doesn't mean you're a terrorist. I mean, let's be clear. The issue is not whether he was a Muslim as a child or a Christian. It doesn't matter. The issue is, what are his social inclinations? Not his religious inclinations. That's my position. Thanks for the call. I don't look at a man's religion in any way and say that makes him this or that. I look at a man's social inclinations. I think that's far more important. 1-800-44, I don't even know my number anymore. I'm talking in code. San Francisco, Jack, you're on the Savage Nation.
In this day and age when people are buying IKEA instead of their local furniture wood shop and eating McDonald's instead of going to the local malt shop, you know, you've seen lately like a depreciation in the value of American craftsmanship, right?
What craftsmanship? Where?
Custom people that make custom woodwork and custom clothes.
Oh, yes, there's plenty of American craftsmen, but they're basically not heard from. They're buried in the past. Thanks for the call. Well, what do you think of this goofball, Jerry Brown, in California? Here's a state being overrun by drug dealers from Mexico. Here's a state being overrun by illegal aliens, sucking the state dry. And this goofball, Moonbeam Brown, comes out on the Anna Nicole Smith case. If you talk about a man who's not qualified to be governor, it would be Jerry Brown. I mean, this guy gets a thumbs down. I've never seen anything like this. Never. It's astounding to me how out of touch with reality is. I mean, I sent the money a couple of years ago. I was fooled. I have a friend who introduced me to him. You know, he said he's become a centrist. I found out once a moonbeam, always a moonbeam. Now, what choice are you going to have in California? Him or any Twosome Newsome? Look at the American political system. Here you have the most populous state in America. Look who's running for the governorship. One goofball after another. Either it's any Twosome Newsome or moonbeam. That's your choice. And then some woman no one ever heard of who bankrupted a company. You hear what I just said to you? California's overrun by illegal aliens like locusts who have eaten the social pie and bankrupted the state. You've got drugs, you've got gangs, and this guy comes out with a show thing today. He's going to prosecute the Anna Nicole case. You hear this? No one cares about this. Now, you understand why the people have become utterly cynical and are walking away from politicians? The problem is, and I could do it, you know, I could say to you that I'm getting away from politics as of Monday. I'm going to walk away from it. That unless there's something really outrageous, I'm not going to do politics anymore in the Savage Nation on a regular basis because it's futile to do so. However, the shocks to the system under Obama are so frequent and so beyond the pale of comprehension that I don't know how to stop talking about politics. Every day we're shocked either by one appointment or another, one corrupt act or another, one gaffe or another. You understand? I'll be right back.
Savage.
My mind, which one you are, I'd like to wake up and find. Devil or angel, dare we
beware the enemy within. Watch out for who you let into your house. That's all I can tell you. Look out for who you let into your house. And people who fake as conservatives are the lowest of the low, by the way. Watch out for people who are... The most dangerous people I met in my life are not outright liberals, by the way. The most dangerous people I've met in my life are people who pose as conservatives or pose as patriots, but in fact are the enemy within. And I'll tell you that story more another day. Once I find out something that I think is true, I will expose the person's name and his home address with a map right to his door. Jamie in Miami, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, sir. I'm grateful to you and some of your colleagues who are making more of this business of closing Guantanamo and bringing these terrorists into the American civilian criminal justice system.
Right, and look who Obama appointed to head up the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department today, a man who defended American Taliban, John Walker Lynn. Don't you see what they're setting up to do? They're setting up to release these terrorists because Obama was put in there by people friendly to the terrorists.
Absolutely.
That's my opinion. How do you connect the dots otherwise?
I don't know what people must be thinking, and I don't know why there isn't a lot of screaming and hollering about this. We tried this for years under Janet Reno. We were limping along prosecuting the first tower bombers in the American criminal justice system, and it was a failure. It was a nightmare. Sure, ultimately, finally, a couple of them got convicted.
You mean trying to convict them in an American civil court when they were able to hire lawyers, who actually the lawyers were working for nothing. The radical left-wing lawyers from NYU, Columbia, and Harvard, and the lowest law schools in America did this for fun.
But even before you get into the courtroom, since when do we expect our soldiers on the battlefield to be collecting shells and picking and documenting evidence for a...
Right. In other words, they're going to deball the U.S. first going through some sicko commie lawyer in the Justice Department.
Permits us to hold...
Jamie, are you an officer of the law?
Yes.
No, I didn't mention that. We are in Miami?
Miami-Dade County.
Oh, God.
I know a little bit about the criminal justice system, and it's a bear. And to imagine our soldiers in the battlefield having to stop to Mirandize people to prepare them for the American criminal justice system is shocking. When we were at war...
But that's what Obama has wanted to do since the time he was a little boy. He has wanted to do this. He has sympathy for the devil here, Jamie. You know that and I know that. It's written all over him. Everything he says tells us this.
That will make us unsafe. He is taking away some of the safety precautions.
Well, you as an officer of the law have the same problems, only worse. Before you can draw a gun, you have to think very carefully. Before you fire that gun, you have to think even more carefully. And if, God forbid, you should get in a shootout to save your life or save an innocent civilian, you're the one on the trial, not the killer.
Always. Always.
All right, so now what Obama's doing is turning those rules over onto the U.S. military to make them hesitate in a gunfight. And you know what happens when a person hesitates in a gunfight and the other person doesn't.
I certainly do.
Well, there you go. That's the new America. There's the new America under the radical president that we currently have, Jamie. See, he just wants to make sure the police are reined in, you understand, because of their excesses.
Of course, we're very excessive.
You're the excessive force, people. You understand that?
Yes. We're.
Well, you know, when all you-know-what breaks loose in this country, who are they going to blame, you? Or are they going to blame these radical left-wing, wild-eyed lunatics in the Justice Department?
By undoing the war on terror, by wringing out the language of war, by pulling us off the battlefield, even though we're on the battlefield. In every other conflict, when prisoners are taken, they are kept until the war is over. They are kept incommunicado in prisoner of war camps.
But Jamie, look what's happened with some of the rats who have been released from Guantanamo. They've gone back to the battlefield after liberals argued they posed no threat.
Which is why we're supposed to keep them incarcerated until the conflict is over.
And that's why you're not a lawyer in the Justice Department, Jamie.
Touche.
I've always been impressed with officers of the law. People always underestimate their intelligence, Jamie, but never me. And I'll tell you this, if God forbid I was in a bad spot and I had a few minutes to make a call, it would be 911, not ACLU.
Well, exactly so. And you'll notice, I'm sure, anytime you've watched television coverage of conflicts, whether they're civil or whether they're in war, where are the cameramen standing? Usually behind the...
Yeah, right. I understand that. Jamie, let me send you a free copy of my best-selling book while there's some left of Psychological Nudity. We're down to 700 copies now. I'm going to reprint it, but I don't think I'm going to have them in time to continue fulfilling orders when they're ordered. Psychological Nudity flies out to you. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Let us go to the callers around America. We just had Jamie, an officer from Miami. We can go to other parts of the country. Let's go to Las Vegas. Jim, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, I've unfortunately lived through this before. I was in England in the 50s when we socialized.
Oh.
And to be honest, when it's all over, the first people to take the financial hit is the military.
How so?
Well, because they got to fund all this welfare, sir. And you find out that the military budget diminishes as the years go by.
So that's why the once great vaunted British military wound up kind of a midget.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely so.
Yeah, and look what happened in the last 20 years with the reduction of your once great Navy, which ruled the seas.
You're going to make me cry. That's pathetic.
No, I know. I grew up as I hero worship, not only the British Navy, but the derring do of the British people. And I wake up and I see this last week as the British soldiers come home from Iraq. They are jeered by radical Muslims in the street who call them names. Where were the mobs of the British soccer players when we needed them? Where were the louts who beat each other up after a soccer game when we needed them, Jim?
I don't know, sir.
What happened? You know, I keep wondering about that. We see brawny, large, monstrous Brits beating the pulp out of each other after a soccer game, and they're nowhere to be seen while the Muslims in England are screaming death to Britain, jihad is coming. Where are the soccer louts, Jim?
Totally bewildered, as you are, sir. I mean, we've all gone.
I'm very serious about what I say, and I've said it before. Only the hooligans can save the West. By the way, I mean every word I'm saying. Only the hooligans can save the West.
The kick we had was politically correctness. That don't help.
Well, Jim, you know what? You're not alone. You've got to understand something. You may feel isolated and alone, and that's what the American media wants you to believe. You're not alone. Most Americans think the way you do. It's a very tiny minority in the media and in the government who want to hoodwink the population into thinking that we are crazy and we're the minority. We're actually sane and we're the majority. This is the Savage Nation. We'll be back momentarily to take more of your calls on this wonderful Friday. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Yeah.
Well, according to the moderate Rasmussen poll, Obama's poll numbers are falling to earth. In fact, his numbers are lower than that of George W. Bush at the same time in his presidency. But you wouldn't understand that. In fact, the Gallup data echo these concerns. But again, you wouldn't understand that either if you're a radical left-winger. Or if you write for one of the failing newspapers, and you wonder why they're going out of business? Your instincts tell you that the guy is seen for what he is, a charlatan and a fraud. I have talked to people in various walks of life who I never would have believed were, you know, I got to tell you, we're conservative. I don't ask them what their politics are generally, whether I'm out shopping for a pair of pants or a haircut. I don't tell them who I am, really, and I talk very low, and people generally don't know who I am. But they all tell me that Obama looks like an imposter. Everyone says to me, have you seen him getting on Marine One? He looks as though he can't believe he's gotten this far, that the con has gone this far. Can you believe this? So I'm not surprised to see that the numbers say that the people aren't supporting him. The fact of the matter is, the same poll agrees with me on something else, that Bush is the man who actually destroyed the economy. I agree 100%, but I was saying that for the last number of years anyway. That's not news to me. I knew Bush. Who called Bush a fiscal socialist first? Me. When? About last year at this time, I started to get a picture of what he was doing. So none of this is really, news to me. There it is. There's the Finally, they write, what probably accounts for a good measure of the confidence and support the Obama administration has enjoyed thus far is the fact that they are not Republicans. You hear this? Virtually all Americans, more than 8 in 10, blame Republicans for the current economic woes, and they're right. And the only two leaders with lower approval ratings than Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi are Republican leaders Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. Mitch McConnell looks like Charlie McCarthy. The guy looks like a puppet. How could a man reach a point in life where he actually looks and acts like a puppet? Remember you put on a, what's the difference? Why talk about it? I can talk from today till tomorrow. It's not going to make a difference. That's reaching a point of cynicism, utter cynicism. Sacramento, John, you are on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. You know, the most irritating thing about this entire situation is that we as a nation have sat on our hands and you know, turned a blind eye to this entire transformation of our society to a neutered bunch of sissies. You know, it's just...
Well, but here's the problem. It isn't a neutered bunch of sissies. Look at the emergence of mixed martial arts. The violence underneath the surface is there. It's never been stronger, John. There's a tremendous machismo in America that is just under the surface of the sissified nation.
Well, and that's you know, it's just under the surface there, but I mean the people that are in power, I mean we have been completely brainwashed to think politically.
I agree with you. Most of them are of the liberal sissified types. And the true red-blooded American types have been thrown out of the government. There's no question. You're talking about the current administration.
Well, the entire party that as they exist. I mean, you know, President Obama is just the end result of a plan that was put into place way back in the '60s by taking over the universities, by taking over.
You want to go back to that? The Long March. I understand what that means. I certainly understand. He is the end product of the long march by the radical left into every aspect of American life. On that, we certainly agree.
I don't want to input.
But the question is, John, now that they have the ultimate dream, the ultimate prize, the ultimate power, what will happen? Are they capable of hoodwinking the average American sufficient to bring about the Maoist revolution that they dream of? With death camps? You want me to put out the whole nightmare vision?
Believe me, I've considered all the scenarios.
You want me to put out the nightmare vision of arresting people for being patriotic? People on suspicion of being anti-government? You want me to go down the list of what could happen under this group of left-wingers? Virtually anything that's happened in China or the ex-Soviet Union can happen here.
Well, and the sad thing is it's going that direction unless we seriously make some changes in the way that we deal with this. I mean,
well, what changes can you make? Tell me what changes you can make. I have to open my mouth and talk about this every day, putting myself at risk. Do you think I enjoy doing this? Do you think I'm a fool?
No, but you know what, Michael? I appreciate it. I you've opened my eyes. I've been listening now for about 6 years. I've been commuting on the freeway from Reading to Sacramento for 6 years for work. When I commute.
Well, take a look. Let's talk about your state. Look at Schwarzenegger. When he came along, I was totally not taken in by his muscles, his muscle-bound prose. I didn't buy it for a minute. And I knew that he had a connection to the Kennedy family, and I said so. Remember when he was running for governor, he wouldn't come on my show, even though it was the most powerful show in the afternoons in California. Remember that? He went on many other shows. He wouldn't come near me. It's the same with all of these other fake Republicans, John.
Well, and, you know...
But I blame them for this. I don't blame the left wing for taking power when there was a power vacuum to be had. They entered a power vacuum created by the false, phony Republicans under Bush. Bush is the man who gave us Obama.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, this has been, I mean, Bush, Obama, they're just the final, well, not even the final, but I mean, it's almost the end result of what they started on so many years ago. Politically correctness,
Well, we've heard that phrase to the point where it has almost no meaning. I believe the concerns about George W. Bush by the far right were 100% correct. He and his father were members of the New World Order. They were going to drag us into the New World Order. People didn't even understand what that meant. And they considered anyone who was talking about that as crazy. They don't understand what that means. It's very simple. The diminution of the... status of America in the world, the erasure of our borders, the dilution of our language, and the, let us say, dilution of our culture. Bush worked on that repeatedly for 8 straight years. So it's not that Obama came out of nowhere and the administration. They're almost an extension of the Bush administration in so many ways. I mean, that's what it is to me. It's not like Alpha to the Omega. Bush was never a conservative, John. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Bush was a middle-of-the-road guy at best, but a far leftist in almost all of his policies.
Well, and you know,
with the exception of one area or two areas. One was his correct vision on radical Islam. He saw it for what it is. Obama has taken the side of the radical Islamists by today saying they will no longer be called enemy combatants. I guess he's going to rename them freedom fighters. Thanks for the call. Now, if you want to talk to more people than you'll meet for the rest of your life, there's only one place to do it, and that's the Savage Nation. New York City, WOR, Joe wants to talk to you. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. I was wondering if I could get a comment or your thoughts on a story that I read yesterday about Sheriff Joe Arpaio from Maricopa County in Arizona.
Yes, being picked on by that fat slob from your hometown who's doing the bidding of Janet Napolitano, our Homeland Security chief. Why is Gerald Nadler, that loser from Brooklyn, picking on Sheriff Joe? What is it his business?
Well, actually, I think Sheriff Joe should be minted as a national hero. I mean, he's only enforcing...
Right. He arrested about 16,000 illegal aliens when the federal government didn't do their job. The American people backed Sheriff Joe. But why is Nadler the man attacking Sheriff Joe? Think about that. Why is he being the mouthpiece for Janet Napolitano?
Well, ultimately, it's because I believe that the Democratic Party is looking to get votes from the Latino population.
Well, I don't mind them getting votes from Latino Americans, but what about from Latino illegal aliens? Why don't they just go to Mexico and run a campaign?
Well, they're going to end up becoming American citizens before you know it.
Well, that's the end of America. If Obama should do that, it's the end of the country. It's all over. There's no coming back from that. It's the end of it, because if you look at the people who will be deputized as good Democrats, you'll find that the largest majority of them are illiterate in their own language, never mind in the English language. I mean, that's a fact of reality. I know it's uncomfortable for people to digest that, but most of the illegal aliens who come here are at the lowest end of their own society. They have no language skills. They can speak the language, but they can't read or write it, most of them. I don't think people understand that. And that's exactly why the Democrats and the Republicans want more of them in this country. It's so they can continue to fleece the public, do virtually what they want without any opposition. They don't want a vigilant population in this country, Joe. They want an ignorant population, Joe. You understand that? Sure, vigilance was once an American virtue and an American value. But where vigilance once stood, today there's ignorance. San Francisco, Bill, KNEW, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Michael. I just wanted to comment on the Guantanamo issue that you were discussing earlier. It's kind of scary if they're going to bring these enemy combatants, because that's exactly what they are, into the U.S. justice system. It's going to be kind of difficult for, I don't see how the U.S. government is going to be able to prove that they have jurisdiction over these individuals in a U.S. court of law, considering they're being arrested for what? Engaging in war against our U.S. troops on foreign soil. I fail to see how the government's going to be able to establish that, although I see the politics behind it from Obama.
Well, you got to understand, to Obama and his minions, look at his appointment to the Civil Rights Division today. They are not enemy combatants. They're actually friendly allies. They're on their side. I mean, let's level with each other here. They're setting it up so they're released. Don't you see that, Bill?
Oh, absolutely.
Obama wants these terrorists from Guantanamo not to be given a civil trial. He wants them released altogether. And then they'll go ahead and sue the government for false imprisonment. Think, to Obama, they're all Mumia Abu Jamal. Do you understand that? This man sat in Reverend Wright's church for 20 years listening to this brainwashing, and then he told us he didn't believe a word that Reverend Wright said. But he's acting out everything Reverend Wright put in his head when you think about it. Okay, I mean, I don't want to bust a blood vessel here. This is too much for me. I know what's going on. I can see it from a mile away. We can see it. They're no longer enemy combatants. The terrorists from Guantanamo have been redesignated today by Obama's Justice Department. They are no longer called enemy combatants. Well, they haven't actually called them freedom fighters yet, but soon they'll be released. Okay? 1-800-449. Do you know what we're talking about? Justice abandons term enemy combatant. Detaining prisoners in Guantanamo, they've been renamed, redesignated. Let's put it to you that way. And the article's so important. The Obama administration is abandoning one of Bush's key phrases in the war on terrorism, enemy combatant. In court filings today, this is news, the so-called Justice Department, under Eric Holder, said it will no longer use the term to justify holding prisoners at Guantanamo Bay. Now, listen to me. What you have to understand here is that Eric Holder, who is now the chief law enforcement official in the United States of America, gave pardons to 16 Puerto Rican bombers and terrorists. He gave pardons to criminals, and yet he was approved by the Republicans when he came up to be the head of the Justice Department. Now, releasing 16 old Puerto Rican terrorists 30 years after they've been in prison is one thing, but releasing people who will go back to the battlefield and kill your sons and daughters is quite another. The Justice Department, so-called, under Eric Holder, says prisoners can only be detained if their support for al-Qaeda or the Taliban was substantial. Do you understand what he's done here? Eric Holder has taken the side of Guantanamo detainees. Do you understand that? Do you have any idea that you're watching a revolution occur right in front of your eyes? Do you understand that now you understand where the money came from? The $900 million that appeared in Obama's coffers in the last month that they wouldn't disclose? Do you understand where it came from yet? Try to figure it out, dummy. I'll be right back. Savage. Look, there is a, you know, you say, is there a silver lining in the cloud? Every cloud has a silver lining. And if we can survive the 4 years of this tyrannical regime, and it's a big if, and I'm saying words I really mean, if we can survive the 4 years of these fraud artists and these incompetents, the Democrats will not be elected for the next 25 years. And I want you to understand there's evidence for this, not only in past elections. Carter gave us Reagan. But look at the newspapers. The newspapers are dying precisely because they have espoused the kind of crap that Obama is legislating. Do you understand that they're going out of business because people don't want these newspapers anymore? Never mind that the internet is taking business. That's only a part of it. The newspapers are dying because you're not buying them. They're dying because you're not buying. Liberalism is actually dead in America. It's only alive in the universities. It's alive in the newspapers. It's alive in the government. It's like a Frankenstein that's come back from the crypt to haunt America. Let me read you some stories, for example, from a dying newspaper in San Francisco, a paper that will soon be sold off or completely eliminated, just put out of business. No matter what people have said to these fools who write for the Chronicle in San Francisco, they continue to write left-wing garbage. These people are literally digging their own graves. They'd rather die than understand how out of touch with reality they are. They say, well, it's because of the internet. No, it's because of their writing and their bias and their hatred for everything good. Here's an article. Listen to this. This is a headline out of ex-University of California tree sitter seriously hurt by an Israeli tear gas canister at West Bank protest. In other words, a pain in the neck green maniac who got away with murder, defecating in essence on the San Francisco Bay Area with his stupid green protests, now goes to Israel, tries to do in Israel during a West Bank protest what he was doing here, and he gets shot with a tear gas canister, and now he's crying boo-hoo. Here's another article. Wells Fargo sued by NAACP. That's right. A suit alleges that the San Francisco banking giant discriminated against blacks in its mortgage lending. I'll let that one just hang in the air. What? Discriminated against blacks? What? You mean Okay, let's just think that one through. Just think that one through. This is the Savage Nation, where reality rules. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website that has all of these stories and more. Burlington, Vermont. Sue, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I just want to say, if you could elaborate on the term communism, because the young voters of this nation have no idea. When you say radical communist, they think it's just the norm. They think that's what we're supposed to be going to.
Well, people say to me, what do you mean by socialism? What do you mean by communism? You know, as I said about a month ago, there are hundreds of varieties of both of the above. There's no one monolithic definition of communist or communism. By any definition, Obama is a communist. Right now of a very mild sort, Sue. But if he is allowed to aggrandize more power through these czars, he will become a very dangerous dictator. That's my fundamental belief.
I think I've always felt, you know, from the first time I heard about him in Chicago politics, I mean, I, you know, keep up in the Wall Street Journal and things, and, you know, I said, this guy is just a radical.
How did this man, an unknown radical leftist street agitator, become president of the United States virtually overnight? Why has this story not yet been written? Who put him here? Who is behind Obama? What are the forces? What are the powers? Who funded him? It's all about money. They bought him the election. Remember what Arnold Rothstein, the gangster, said, who fixed the 1918 World Series? He said you could fix the World Series in America if you have enough money.
Yeah, and I got one more question for you. Whatever happened to Bob Grant, anyway?
He's on a West Palm Beach with a man of pig. Eureka, California. Monty, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Savage, it's an honor to talk to you. I was looking at your website earlier today and I see Walmart launching Hispanic supermarkets in Arizona, in Houston.
Well, that's the sign of the times. I think that Walmart should eliminate English altogether because I think it's offensive to people from other countries.
True.
I don't think there should be any English signs at all in America. I think that it makes immigrants feel kind of uneasy and unwelcome. I think we need to be an even more welcoming nation. I think that we should eliminate English in all public places because under Obama, it's part of the old world, the English language. We should get rid of it altogether. White House misspells Brazilian leader's name, bumps visit with Obama. They can't even spell. Hey, it's the Savage Nation, another big hour. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here were Savage's top five topics of the week, the week in review. Here were the topics we've talked about this week on the Savage Nation. Stem cell research was one. Obama signed yet another executive order reversing Bush's limits on embryonic stem cell research. But life begins at conception when the egg is fertilized by the sperm. Just look at what happens to a tomato. When you plant a tomato seed and a sprout begins to grow, we all understand that there is life there, even though you don't have a whole tomato yet. And scientists are now developing alternatives to stem cell research which do not destroy human life. It's called adult stem cells. Shouldn't we use these instead of buying into the liberal culture of death? The Hollywood idiots in Iran was another topic. A gaggle of Hollywood idiots, including Annette Bening, went to Iran to kiss the hem of the enemy's garments. When will they realize that the leftist culture they love so much would be annihilated if the Islamofascists that they kiss would ever come to power. We then disclosed Pelosi's private airplane, or shall we say Pelosi's attempts to make the Air Force into her own. It was revealed this week that Nancy Pelosi has been using the U.S. Air Force as her own private airline. She's used military planes to fly herself, colleagues, and her family around the country at your expense. And when the Air Force refused her request, she became enraged. Isn't first class good enough for Nancy? Bernie Madoff was another topic. Bernie Madoff pled guilty this week to defrauding investors of over $50 billion. He was finally taken from his luxurious Manhattan penthouse to the jail cell where he belongs. But do you think that Madoff did this alone? Who helped him? And if he was helped, why have no others been arrested? If the authorities were to dig too deeply, would they find a connection to the secretary of the SEC? Or does this go even higher than that? And then there was the story of a man you never heard of called Van Jones. Obama hired this man who has a history as a street agitator and police hater as his new green czar. Are you concerned that gangs of thugs will be deputized and armed in this country by Obama's federal government to impose its environmental policies on the people under the auspices of green jobs? With Obama planning to let federal funds be used in stem cell research, this brought up a lot of discussion about the moral implications of such science.
It is about ensuring that scientific data is never distorted or concealed to serve a political agenda, and that we make scientific decisions based on facts, not ideology.
Hmm. Joining us now on this issue is Selwyn Duke to talk about science and morality.
Hi, Michael. Great to be on the show again. You know, everybody's been talking this week about how Barack Obama has lifted the ban on embryonic stem cell research and how he said that scientific decisions should be based on facts and not ideology. Now, of course, this sounds good, but does it really make sense? Well, let's examine the matter. Now, I'm sure we all remember Barack Obama's answer to a question about when a baby gets human rights. He said, "That's above my pay grade." Now, sure, it was a flippant remark, but you know what? Actually, it probably was one of the times Obama was being perfectly honest, and I'm not being facetious here. What I mean is, Obama is confused about quite a number of moral issues, and he's not alone. You see, just like societies always have, we embrace a lot of nonsense. We defend all sorts of lunacy with certain battle cries, ones that really, well, are getting a little stale. For instance, people will speak of academic freedom. This is nonsense. Activists will talk about students' right to free speech in school. This is nonsense. And people such as Obama say that science shouldn't be constrained by ideology. And this is also nonsense. Because whether we realize it or not, and this is true on both sides of the aisle, mind you, we always, always establish ethical limits in intellectual endeavors. For instance, we wouldn't allow a college professor or a schoolboy within academia's halls to openly espouse Nazi ideology and the extermination of a minority, right? And we wouldn't allow scientists to experiment on that minority. That is, unless that minority happens to be unborn babies, unfortunately. But it sounds oh so noble to speak of academic freedom, freedom of speech in school, or scientific freedom. It's the mark of a pseudo-intellectual. But now, the question still is, why can't science's ethical boundaries be left to scientists? Well, because science unfettered means what? It means not only great triumphs, but also Dr. Mengele experimenting on twins, right? It means Alfred Kinsey encouraging pedophiles so he could collect data. Now, I know, you may say that using children as guinea pigs or molesting them is obviously wrong, sure. But you know what? Not according to science.
That seems very radical, don't you think?
This may seem like a radical statement, so I'll explain it. You cannot prove any moral principle scientifically, because morality lies in the philosophical realm. Now, here some will say, now wait a second, Duke, wait, what about murder? It hurts other people. Well, okay. I've been around this circle before, so here we go. A moral relativist will respond, prove that it's wrong to hurt other people, and then you may say, but it's bad for society. And the moral relativist will say, prove that it's wrong to hurt society. And you know what? You'll stay on this merry-go-round forever until you come to the conclusion that there really is right and wrong because something above man and superior to him says so, until you realize that absolute truth and, therefore, God exist.
Well, that's why I talk about God in the Bible so much on this show.
And yeah, Michael, and I love the fact that you talk about God on your show. But you know what? This is why science can tell us what we can do, but not what we should do. You cannot prove the existence of truth or God in a laboratory, and this is why a man of science who is only a man of science and nothing more can become a Kinsey, who, by the way, would sometimes refer to a child with the pronoun it. A man of science who is only a man of science would probably tell you that he never saw a soul in a petri dish or a moral principle proven empirically. Now, don't misunderstand me. This isn't to say that every scientist is an amoral automaton. Some scientists are highly moral people, but we have to recognize the group's characteristic limitations. Because, you see, many find it preposterous that a bishop or a philosopher or George Bush would constrain the endeavors of brilliant men such as an Einstein or a James Watson. But they miss a very important point. And you know what that is? While these scientists' intelligence may be great, it's also narrow. I mean, look, how often do we find great scientific minds that are also great philosophical ones? It hardly ever happens. In fact, if you speak to many scientists, you find that often a great many limitations become apparent. For instance, they're sometimes inarticulate and can't even translate their thoughts well into words.
Because they spend more time with test tubes than with people.
Yeah, Michael, you know what? I think many scientists are like a test tube, deep but narrow. But anyway, look, I don't mean to demean scientists. All I'm saying is we all have limitations, and being extremely gifted in one area isn't synonymous with being a jack of all trades. Being a chess master doesn't mean being a great writer any more than being a great writer means being a great physicist. And, well, in the same vein, being a great scientist has nothing at all to do with being a great moral philosopher. It's often above such a person's pay grade. For example, listen to this. Harvard Stem Cell Institute co-director, science thrives when there is an open and collaborative exchange, not when there are artificial barriers, silos, constructed by the government, unquote. Now, again, this sounds good, but what's implied is nonsense. Look, Kinsey would tell his underlings that, quote, as scientists, they are not bound by bourgeois morality, unquote, to eliminate any aversion to child molestation that they might have had. That's what he did. To him, that was just an artificial barrier.
That's not the artificial barrier Kinsey needed.
Yeah, Michael. The artificial barriers we needed in Kinsey's case were the walls of Indiana State Prison. I know. But here's the thing. What does it mean for a barrier to be artificial? It means it has no basis in reality, that it's created by man. So, to a Darwinist such as Kinsey, who believed humans were just highly evolved animals and didn't believe in truth and therefore thought right and wrong were inventions of man, all moral barriers are artificial. And this means that to such a person, discerning moral principles is definitely above his pay grade. In other words, there can't be moral barriers unless moral reality, truth in other words, exists. And we can't know if a given moral barrier is artificial or not without understanding moral reality or truth. And because of this, no sophisticate who takes pride in seeing only shades of gray has any business determining the artificiality of moral barriers and drawing up science's ethical boundaries. Because, you know what, a person like that just doesn't know enough, and his pronouncements are nothing but hot air. Now, this is where leftists will say that we traditionalists are arrogant for claiming we know what truth is. But whether we're right or wrong, you know what, we're logically consistent. Because, you see, these relativistic leftists claim humility by saying they don't know moral reality, but then what do? Then they prove their stupidity by legislating on it regardless. They talk about shades of gray, but then turn their values into black and white laws. Does this make any sense? If a person admits he knows nothing about brain surgery, sure, he may be humble. But if he then decides to take a scalpel to someone's cranium anyway, it's his mind that needs work. And getting back to Obama, there's an irony here. Who's really being ideological? And what I mean is, insofar as an ideology is correct and prescribes true morality, it absolutely should constrain science. But then in this case, it's not ideology constraining science, is it? No, it's morality. It's truth. Now, Since Obama has admitted that the matter of when life begins is above his pay grade, this means that, assuming he respects life, this means that he's admitted he doesn't have enough information to make a moral decision in that area. And this means that he made his decision on some other basis. Now, what was it, Mr. Obama? Was it, perchance, ideology? Was it the ideology of your pro-death supporters, huh? Anyway, as for determining the limits of science, moral relativists like Obama can try to paint the world gray all they want. But listen, there's no substitute for knowing truth, because it's a prerequisite for making moral decisions. But here's the thing. Truth can't be seen through a telescope or in a test tube. And this is why, Mr. Obama, I'd sooner trust 200 people out of the phone book to govern science than the whole body of scientists themselves. And I certainly would trust them more than I trust you. Michael, thank you for having me on the show, and God bless you and your audience.
Thanks, Selwyn. I've said we all have animals within us. It's our morals that keep us together as a functioning society. This is the Savage Nation. Savage.
My heart in San Francisco.
This is Michael Savage. I feel like Voltaire on visiting the Mediterranean, who wishes he was back in Paris. I mean, I miss San Francisco. You can't understand how wonderful it is to live in a place where everyone is so phenomenally rich with the potential for ridicule. It's what drove Voltaire into his late years, people would say to Voltaire. Why do you live in Paris if you ridicule them so? And he said, that's the answer to your question. I mean, where else could I live? He said, the foibles of the Parisian produces great fodder for me. Unfortunately, where I'm living right now, things are so nice, there's nothing to focus on locally. It's too good. The air is clean. There's no noise. There's no barbecue smoke, no wood fireplaces. You know, San Francisco, where I live, is the most polluted place I've ever lived in my life, filled with green morons. Green morons. Green morons. They burn wood fires at night, giving themselves and their children cancer, and they think that they're into protecting global warming. But it's wonderful to live around that. So another radical appointed by Obama. More details have come out in the latest Obama appointee scandal. I told you that the office of the man that Obama appointed as the federal government's chief information officer was raided by the FBI. Vivek Kundra used to be head of technology for Washington, D.C. before Obama appointed him. And on Thursday, two men who worked for him were arrested as part of a federal bribery sting. Their names, Yusuf Akar and Sushil Bansal. Now we find out that Kundra is on leave from his White House job until further details of the case become known. Well, here's some further details. Authorities are now saying that Kundra's associates defrauded the government by billing us for false items and paying non-existent contractors. Huh. But this is only the most recent in a long list of scandals involving Obama appointees. It's becoming like a banana republic. There was Tim Geithner, Bill Richardson, Nancy Kalefer, Tom Daschle, the husband of Obama's nominee for U.S. Labor Secretary, Hilda Solis, Ron Kirk, and the rabid anti-Semite Charles Freeman. None of these scandals seem to have any effect on Obama's determination to continue appointing less than perfect, shall we say, corrupt officials. These people think they're above the law. They think the law is for you, the working man, but not for them. Obama's numbers are down, Geithner on the edge, disorder in the court. Let's start with disorder in the court. Justice Ruth Bad Girl Ginsburg implied today there could be an opening on the Supreme Court, but didn't hint at who might be leaving. Was she talking about herself? Or will another leftist judge, such as the 88-year-old John Paul Stevens, soon be retiring? Regardless of who goes, will this be Obama's opportunity to try and force an out-and-out Marxist on the Supreme Court? Would he perhaps consider Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton? After all, neither of them are qualified. That would be perfect. They could report right to him, as in a banana republic. Obama's numbers are down, believe it or not. In spite of constant media adulation, Obama's poll numbers are going down. Even liberal polling outfits like Rasmussen are having to admit this. Obama's approval rating is lower now than G.W. Bush's was at the same time in his presidency. and they're getting lower. But you wouldn't know that, would you? Not watching CNN. Geithner, uh-huh. Timothy Geithner has now proven to all America that he's a boy trying to step into a man's job. He has no solutions for the economy but socialism. And he's being overshadowed by ex-Clinton hack Larry Summers. And looks like he may be fired by Obama. Will Obama have the sense to replace him before it's too late? If he does, will he merely be replaced by someone with the same agenda? Of course. The steps that Obama has taken so far are all wrong. Every one of them has been wrong, which is why he's reversed himself virtually every day. Moreover, his appointments are shocking if you actually analyze them, which I have done all week long. I predict Timothy Geithner will be out within a very short period of time. The Boy Scout will be looking for a job.
Set.
Now turning to the good little website that could, michaelsavage.com, let's start from the bottom and work our way up to the top. On the bottom, we read from the Wall Street Journal that Maxine Waters, the big mouth leftist who hates the establishment, well, according to the Wall Street Journal, she helped a bank directed by her husband. Oh, yes. Scratch the surface of any radical leftist and what you find is a would-be capitalist. Ms. Waters said she was unaware that the bank received $12 million of TARP money, which arrived in December, even though, of course, she was on that committee. From the New York Post, Ruth Madoff fights for her life of luxury. Isn't that something? Obama's poll numbers are falling to earth, according to Scott Rasmussen. That's right. That's the real truth. Of course, you won't read it in tomorrow's newspaper, which is, of course, why tomorrow's newspaper will soon be yesterday's trash. White House wooing Washington social elite while publicly identifying with the nation's have-nots, the Obamas have been cultivating the Beltway social types. Oh, yeah, what else is new under the sun? Caviar, anyone? Sad story from CNN. Sex offender killed a teen while under GPS monitoring. Sex offender kills a teen while under GPS monitoring. That's right, a poor 13-year-old girl was killed by a sex offender who was wearing a GPS device. A lot of good it did. Here's another one you can't miss. You have to look at this one from the AP on michaelsavage.com. Obama has appointed a pornography lawyer at the number two slot at the Justice Department. That's right. Read it and weep. David Ogden has spent a lot of his professional life representing defendants in porno cases. Welcome to the new disgusting America. We're about to become a third world nation. A few more years. You wait and see. Now, we open the show today describing for you that a lawyer, a radical left-wing lawyer, Tony West, who represented Rat Boy, the American Taliban, John Walker Lynn, who is now rotting in prison where he belongs, in my opinion. His lawyer, Tony West, is now in the U.S. Justice Department. Step by step, day by day, the vision of every left-wing radical in America is being realized under Barack Hussein Obama. Play some music. Obama is a charlatan and a fraud. He's conducting a soft Marxist revolution. Eventually, the people will find out. It may be too late at that point. There's nothing I can do other than expose my beliefs and try to back my beliefs up with the facts on the ground.
Well, now some may call me Mo, some may call me Joe. That's man Mosquito, he don't ever take it slow. Well, now they all call me Mosquito, but my...
Looking at the Obama administration's economic plans, they seem to be confusing to most people. Some of the pieces in the various bailouts and stimulus plans don't make any sense to a lot of people. Joining us now is the money and politics columnist for U.S. News and World Report, James Pethakoukas, to talk about his latest piece entitled Putting Obama on the Couch. James, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on again. I really appreciate it.
Tell us about your article.
Well,
I really started thinking about it after I was being, you know, interviewed to be on a, I will leave unnamed, talk show. And sometimes they'll do pre-interviews. And I was talking to the woman, the assistant producer, and she asked me what I thought about, President Obama's economic policies. And I said various things that I disagreed with. And she kind of paused for a second. She seemed a little stunned. First of all, I think that anyone would dare object to, the president's economic policies. And then she just kind of, in just in a completely serious voice, said to me, "So, like, do you think the president is just being mean or something?" And I didn't quite know how to respond to that. I said, "Well, no, I don't think he's trying to be mean. I think they just have a different model of how economies work." So I began to think about it more. It did seem puzzling because when you look at some of the things the president has proposed, you know, they come up with this, you know, big spending stimulus plan, which, you know, for all its pluses and minuses, and there's lots of minuses, really does not do much to help the economy, even try to help the economy here in 2009 or even the first part of 2010. So that's kind of puzzling. And also, you know, you look at some of the other things, like this economic forecast they came out with, which is just unbelievably, you know, bullish and positive. Basically, they're counting on this economy to turn around on a dime and just be back to nice, strong growth starting in 2010. It's very difficult to find anyone else who believes that, especially when you usually have these banking crises. It takes a while for the economies to turn around. Anyway, and this whole, you know, prediction about what the budget deficit's going to be like in 4 years, also based on this very positive prediction. I'm like, well, this, you know, what's driving it? Is it just that they have the wrong model, or what is it? So, or are they just mean? And I tried to go a little deeper than just mean. So I think, well, maybe what's wrong with the administration is they're falling victim to what a lot of economists will call, you know, behavioral finance flaws. There's this whole new school of thinking. It's very big in the University of Chicago, where many Obama economic advisors are from. Used to be known for free market economics, and now they like this thing called behavioral economics, where they look at all the ways people are sort of hardwired mentally to make bad decisions. You know, so in a way, it's not our fault. We're sort of just born that way, and that's why we make, you know, silly financial decisions. And if you look at some of these ways in which we're hardwired, maybe that explains what's going wrong with the Obama administration. Maybe they're falling victim to these weird sort of psychological phenomena that seem to affect people and investors.
Well, give us an example of this.
Now, a classic one is something they call anchoring, an anchoring bias. It's where you sort of come up with an idea, and then it's very hard for people to sort of move away from that original idea, even though the facts have changed. I think maybe we have some anchoring bias going on here with the Obama administration, where they came up with this economic plan back when the president first decided to run for president back in 2006. And they really haven't. Now, we live in a dramatically different economic climate, but their economic plan really hasn't changed very much, which is we're going to have this cap-and-trade green tax on the environment. We're going to have a health care plan, we're going to raise taxes. And that plan, they really have not moved very much off that plan, even though right now we're sitting in a really dreadful economy that probably the last thing it needs is higher investment taxes. The last thing it needs is higher or some sort of energy tax. But yet that's the plan they're stuck to. So maybe it's this anchoring phenomenon. Maybe they just can't move away from that original idea. I mean, that's a classic sort of behavioral quirk that, you know, maybe they're falling victim to that one.
What do you mean by attentional bias?
That's one of my favorite. That's where you sort of ignore relevant data or other information out there when you're trying to make a decision or make a judgment. Now, one of the things this administration wants to do, obviously, is they want to raise taxes, which seems like a very strange thing to be doing right now. And because they seem to think that, you know, it really doesn't matter if you raise taxes, and sort of consequently, they think if we cut taxes, it really wouldn't help the economy that much. When right in front of them, almost sitting there screaming at them, are recent examples where, yes, where we have cut taxes and the economy's responded pretty well. We only have to go back to 2003 where we cut taxes, and really, if you look at the numbers, whether it's job gains, GDP gains, or income gains, the economy really took off. Same thing in 1997. And, of course, you know, the classic case was with the Reagan tax cuts. Now, these are examples that aren't 100 years ago or going back to the Great Depression or the 1780s or something. These are all within the last two decades. Yet somehow they're falling victim to this attentional bias. I'm not going to say they're being mean, but they're falling victim to this attentional bias where they just can't seem to pay attention to some very relevant information right in front of them.
Of course, it couldn't be overconfidence.
Well, I'll tell you, the president has been accused of perhaps being maybe a bit overconfident. Some would say arrogant, maybe cocky at times. So maybe it's really a kind of a psychological phenomenon, this overconfident effect. And they've done lots of studies of people who seem to make decisions, and they'll say, you know what, I think they'll take a test and they'll think, you know what, I think my answer is I have 100% chance of being right. They've done this study many times, and they'll find out these people are really maybe only 80% right or 60% right, even though they were 100% sure they were right. Well, I think that's what we're seeing with this administration. They are confident that they've got it figured out. They are confident they have the right model. Though, of course, right now, I think what we're seeing in the financial markets is the markets aren't nearly as confident in the model or economic direction that the president wants to take us as what he is. I mean, I think what the markets have been saying since Election Day, almost week after week, month after month, of these sort of grinding, declines in the market have been saying, you know what, I think maybe you're going in the wrong direction. And the mere hint that we might be doing something differently, which came this week, for instance, with, you know, changing these crazy accounting rules, which are forcing these banks to take these huge write-downs, the mere hint that we might be going in a different direction sent the market up 10 or 11%. So I think a balanced person would look at that and think, well, maybe I shouldn't be quite as confident in the direction I'm taking. But so far, I think for the most part, the administration is just kind of, poo-pooing that and saying, the markets, they go up, they go down, which the president said almost directly, and they're still confident in their plan, even though it really doesn't seem to be going in the right direction.
How about just plain wishful thinking?
Well, I mean, who among us is not victim to wishful thinking? And I don't think this administration is different. If there is any example, really, it's this crazy conveniently bullish forecast on the economy. I mean, when he was running for president, he was gloomy. They were gloomy when they were trying to get the stimulus bill passed. And all of a sudden, they seem to be far more positive. And I think that now that they've lapsed into being positive, they've lapsed into what I would call wishful thinking, which is they would love for this economy to turn around. Listen, Election Day 2010 is in 2010 for the Democrats, and, of course, it's for the president in 2012. And if you look at I think what most people would say is a realistic outlook, even if the economy turns around, unemployment's going to be going up. There's a good chance on Election Day for Congress in 2010, people are going to still think this economy isn't doing too well. And given the fact that they want to push these tax increases right as we're coming out of a recession, there's a good chance even on Election Day 2012, people are going to look back and think, you know what, this was a pretty lousy 4 years. So I think we're seeing some wishful thinking by this administration to think that the economy is just going to turn around on a dime, which is what they're forecasting. They're thinking next year is going to be very solid growth, and then it's going to be off to the races in 2011 and off to the races in 2012. And if that's the case, then you should be sinking every dime you have into the stock market. That thing's going to take off. Unfortunately, I think there's a disconnect between the reality, and if you look at past history of what happens when we raise taxes in weak economies or after these sorts of banking crises, the thing that the economy is something to turn around on a dime. I think it's wishful thinking. I think it's sort of fantastic thinking, even bordering into the sort of delusional thinking.
What do you think we should be doing?
Well, I think we ought to be focusing on only one thing, which is making sure that the economy turns around as soon as possible, and what are the policies that would do that. And, I'm sorry they're not going to want to hear that over on Team Obama, but what they need to be doing is, one, putting some certainty into the economic system by saying, we're not going to be raising income taxes, we're not going to be raising capital gains taxes, we're not going to create a new tax for health care or a new tax for energy. Take that stuff off the table. for starters. And two, actually cut taxes. I know it's crazy. I know it's out of fashion. But as I said earlier, you know, it worked in 2003, worked in 1997. Let's suspend capital gains taxes for a while and then reinstitute it at a low rate. Cut corporate business taxes. Give people, cut payroll taxes right now. You know, let's use that strategy, which has worked very, very well over the past 25 years, and let's apply it to these current circumstances. But I think they're just not going to do that. I think they're because of wishful thinking and their optimism and their anchoring and their intentional bias and maybe a few more that I haven't thought of. I think they're just going to stick to their current model and direction.
Thanks, James. Great way to look at things. I'll be right back. Savage. Religion in America has been going on for some time now. These attacks seem to be coming more and more frequently than ever. A bill in Connecticut's state legislature is directly going after the Catholic Church, believe it or not. Well, joining us now is Carl Anderson with the Knights of Columbus to explain what they're trying to do to religion.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on again. We had an extraordinary situation this week in the state of Connecticut. Last week, several legislators introduced legislation to restructure the Catholic Church in the state of Connecticut, and these are same legislators who have been publicly very critical of the Catholic Church's position on a number of public policy issues regarding life and the family. And so we woke up one day, and here was this legislation which basically stripped from our bishops and priests in the state of Connecticut any administrative or financial responsibility for their dioceses and their parishes. So they would be left really at the beck and call of newly appointed boards of directors made up of lay men and women in the parish. So it was taking control away from the bishops and turning them over to other individuals. So some denominations may like that setup, but it's very much an anti-Catholic organization of a church according to Catholic principles. And so there was a huge explosion and reaction because it was seen as what it is. First, a violation of the First Amendment against the government passing a law that relates to the establishment of a church or passes a law that restricts a religious liberty. This is really at the heart of the First Amendment. And so there was a huge explosion. As I said, many, many people were upset about this. Many Catholics were upset. We had about 5,000 Catholics arrive at the State House here in Hartford to protest this yesterday. And the legislators, I think, were caught off guard, embarrassed, and decided to pull down the legislation. They were going to have a hearing on the bill on Wednesday. They canceled the hearing. And so I think we made a significant victory in round one of this issue. But as the founders of the Constitution said, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. So we have to be very careful. And I think the very important thing here is that this doesn't only affect Catholics. See, the problem is if the government can come in and restructure a church because it doesn't like what the church leaders are saying, today it might be the Catholic Church, but tomorrow it could be any church or congregation, synagogue. And so really the power to do something like this with the force of law is an intimidation, and ultimately it's the power to destroy a church. So it really did have a chilling effect here in Connecticut.
What do you think the chances of something like this actually passing would be?
The surprising thing about this legislation is that it's so clearly unconstitutional. And in preparing for the hearings this week, we talked to a large group of constitutional scholars at a variety of law schools, and it was amazing. Either that when they stopped laughing or they stopped saying, "You got to be, you're kidding, aren't you?" They said, obviously, this is unconstitutional. The state can't come in and tell a church how it's got to be organized and take power away from its ordained clergy and give it to other individuals. So we think that the chances ultimately of it becoming law and being enforced by a responsible court is practically zero. The problem is it is an indication of the what I would call the anti-God mentality of the number of people, and this might be this week's attempt. What might be next week's attempt, we'll just have to wait and see. So this is something we have to look very carefully at, and like I say, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
Have you received any feedback?
We've had very good feedback because I think the average citizen understands clearly what the issue is. And if there's one thing, it seems to me, that Americans understand, it's their First Amendment liberties. These liberties are not first for no reason. They're first because they're essential. They're at the heart of American democracy and American liberty. And I think people understand when you threaten free speech, when you threaten religious liberty, when you threaten freedom of the press, Americans, it's in our DNA that these are the things we're standing up for, these are the things worth fighting for, and I think a lot of Americans don't need a great deal of encouragement to stand up and say, look, these are too important to mess around with.
Carl Anderson, thanks for being on the Savage Nation. We do need to keep our eyes open now more than ever with Obama in the White House. The government cannot be allowed to snuff away our fundamental right of religious belief. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.